Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Spotify, PodcastOne.com, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Amazon is hiring near you. Earn a competitive wage and start as soon as 7 days. No resume or experience required. Health and safety are a top priority with all of our roles and sites. Amazon is taking precautions in our buildings to keep people healthy. Go to Amazon.com/apply. That's Amazon.com/apply. Amazon is an equal opportunity employer.
The other regret I think I have is that I was so fearful of if I was going to get killed off. Was it going to be there? It became such a huge part of my life that I started taking the anxiety of juice and putting them in Theo. And I think that that maybe didn't make me enjoy it as much.
Don't you know that the music should be solemn?
This is Theo Rossi.
This is Theory.
Let's go. The first chapter of Theory. Today on the show, we get to sit down with someone who I just have such an enormous amount of respect for, not just as an artist, but as a person, as a human. Just such an incredible actor, has had a huge impact on me. Let's go sit down with Kim Coates. This is Theory. So you're in Canada. I miss you. You look fantastic. You look more and more like Jason Isaacs every day. You...
I'm going to tell him you said that. That'll piss him off.
And the big question here is, you're in Canada, but when we briefly spoke last time, you were in a quarantine in Canada, a mandatory 14-day because you had just arrived. Tell me what's going on. You just got out.
Well, you know, because, you know, ever since you abandoned me in L.A., I don't see you much as I would like. But these kinds of things, which I'm so happy to do with you, anything, anywhere – you know this about me. I basically just escaped Eastern Europe in the nick of time. Like, I was there for 5 weeks filming, and on March the 7th, I got on a big jumbo jet to come back to L.A., and they closed the Vienna airport shortly thereafter. So we all got out in time. No one was sick, obviously. Everyone was well taken care of. That was when Italy was starting to explode, and, you know, Austria being so close to Italy there. So they were anyway, so I got out of there. Came to L.A., and you know my family better than I do. I've got one girl in Toronto, one girl trying to save lives in L.A., and my wife's up here in Canada as well. So I had to make up my mind pretty quickly. Do I stay in L.A. for what could be months, weeks? Mm-hmm. We didn't know 2 weeks ago. Or do I come back up and be with wifey? And I'm kind of glad that I did. So, yeah, I just finished my 14-day self-isolation yesterday. I didn't have any booze for 14 days, Theo.
That's why you look so good.
I thought about you the whole time. What would Theo do? He wouldn't have a drink.
Wouldn't have a drink.
Wouldn't have a drink.
Hence the skin. Hence the way I look.
You've never looked better in your entire life.
I don't age, Kim, except for the two kids. I don't age. This is it. I have a few gray hairs now. But let me...
Did I love those photos you sent to the boys? Oh, my God. They're growing up. Like, what has happened? Do they know what's going on? Do they know?
Yeah, so here's the crazy thing about my life, as we sit here in the middle of a global pandemic, and, you know, Kim and I, obviously, just to get this out of the way, our whole thing has been, since we've known each other, since we've been like brothers and family, him obviously a much older brother, is the frontline workers, the emergency workers, all the people have always been the closest thing to our heart. We've been fortunate enough that that's been our biggest audience and kind of fan base and family. So, you know, first things, hats off to everybody out there that's, you know, doing that. But, you know, what's crazy about me living in Austin right now, because it does seem like the world changed overnight, like literally overnight, right? My kids, 4 and 2 years old, had been sick, one for a week and then one for a week for the 2 weeks before this. So they were both home from school the 2 weeks before the world changed.
Yeah. So
they have been home from school for about, you know, now we're going on over a month. And they, you know, these are two little boys with more energy than I could ever even think of.
More than you, which is
more than me, which is a lot. They have no idea what's going on. They just want to see their friends. You know, we go for walks in the neighborhood. You know, that's we're in a different situation than obviously our families in New York and LA here. We're still under shelter in place and all that, but they see their friends and they can't go across the street and touch them or talk to them.
Yeah.
I also don't want to like scar their little brains. I'm saying that people are sick. Some people are sick and I'm trying to explain it to that. But for a 4-year-old to digest that is hard. And all they keep asking every day is to go back to school. And believe me, when they do, I think, you know, my wife might go do the Lambada and 16 massages because
Megan, my hat off to Megan.
Oh my God.
Live with you and those two little boys.
Oh my God. And Rocco and the dog who's got more energy than anybody. So here's the funny thing to go back, because of course we went right in. You and I, when this whole thing theory came into play, I had no interest in ever doing this because again, and I'm going to give you a couple of compliments right now, is you have always been like, to me, and believe me when I say this, I don't necessarily care if I offend other people, but Kim's like a real actor. So like what that means is that there's actors and then there's actors, right? And our whole thing as a certain kind of actor, and this is all going to go somewhere, is you want to remain faceless, meaning that your characters are what you create. And then you as the person, as Kim Coates, as Theo Rossi, as whatever is, that's secondary. So when this all came up, I had no interest because I never wanted people to really know who I was. I thought social media already makes you know who people are enough. I wanted to protect my characters that I would play and never let them know me. But then, you know, just like kind of what we're in now is the entertainment business changed overnight. It wasn't about that anymore. You know, the character actors and playing characters and living a quiet life had gone away. And you know, when this came up, this podcast idea, I was like, listen, I have no interest in doing it. And then someone urged me to just try one out. And I said, the only way I'll do it is if I record a podcast with Kim and we'll see how it goes. So about a year ago, you and I were in a studio and we recorded what was essentially a test episode of this, what we're doing now. And somehow it got online and a bunch of people listened to it. Have no idea how. And it's been a year that it took me to actually do it. And now here we are doing it again. And the world is a completely different place. Obviously the business stuff, which we'll get into later, is a completely different business. But for me right now, and I think it's preposterous to not talk about what's going on right now, what are you feeling now? You're in Canada. Obviously, you're not in the United States, which is hit a million times harder, right? The numbers are going up constantly and all that. What are you feeling like right now? Because you've been on the go for a while and now here you are.
I'll get into that, but I have to say one thing first. And that is that the reason why you're doing this now, Rossi, is because you're so fucking good at it. Like you, ever since I met you, and all the boys on Sons and Mona, your BFF, and your incredible family. What you and I got to do in becoming best friends was we got to work on Sons together. And most of the stuff you and I did was pretty fucking funny.
Yeah.
And now to think about what you and I talked about a year ago into now what the world is now, so much has happened that, first of all, congratulations on doing this. You were born to do this. You're a fucking great actor, but you can talk like nobody's business. My dad would say, Theo could talk like nobody's business. Like nobody's business. So this is now your business. And trust me when I say this, that people, the most pressing thing is that people are safe. And we care so much about our doctors and nurses and ambulance workers and firemen and the frontline people. That is paramount right now. But there are people out there that will listen to this and it will help them through their day. It will help them through their day. And I've come to realize that people like you who are so good at bringing people together, I'm always going to be smarter and wiser than you because I'm 100 years older than you.
And better looking.
But the taking juice time that you and I used to have, those signings and charities, Staten Strong. We can go on and on and on about our charities. Those days mean something to people when we all struggle together. So, yeah, man. In fact, I would love someday down the road, you will send me that podcast that we did a year ago, because Rossi, how different was that than now what the world is going through now?
Yeah, I mean, and in every way, I mean, totally, totally different. And also, you know, I think also then we were hesitant to talk about certain things, because I think that, again, the business that we're in has always been precarious. You know, you wanted to talk about it, but you never want to say too much. And, you know, and I believe that what we're entering into and what we have already entered into, and especially now, is the age of authenticity, where, like, if you're a real motherfucker, like, you're a real motherfucker. And if you're not, you can't fake the funk for too long. And I feel like in this time that we're in right now, it's also a time of revealing who people really are, because people are scared shit. Nobody knows what the fuck's going on. Nobody knows how they're going to pay their rent. I was just telling this story yesterday. My brother-in-law, who you know is a fireman, married my little sister in the biggest hot zone right now in Brooklyn. His area is so bad that he works in, you know, with the virus. And he's coming home, and they're living with my mom and stepdad, and he's coming home, and he has to, thank God, I mean, you know, he takes his clothes off in the garage, he has to jump right in the shower, and he has to sleep in the basement, because he can't go near my mom and stepdad, he can't go near my sister, you know, and he's out there every day doing it. And when I text him yesterday, and I was just like, how you doing? Checking in on him, you know, wanted to see if he need anything. And he's like, I was born to save people. I was born to help people. So I'm doing exactly what I was born to do. And I was just like, not once was there a complaint. Not once was there. And that attitude is so important, and yet it's so selfless. And I'm sitting here, and I'm obviously, like you, we're worried about our parents. We're worried about our friends. Every day it seems to get closer and closer. You know, my buddy's parents both were just diagnosed. His father's in the hospital. His mom's at home. And nobody can see his father in the hospital. So I think that there's a level of fear. And at the same time, what I think makes it more fearful is us not actually talking about it. We need to talk about it. We need to talk about the anxiety that people are feeling. We need to talk about people being home with their kids 24 hours a day, all the time, and not being able to make them get their energy out and play with their friends.
Not only do I agree with everything you just said, Theo, but it's even more so now. Honesty is now needed more than ever before.
100%.
And when you think about how many times, Theo, have you and I, or you in the last couple of weeks, that the world has completely changed, you know who your real friends are.
That's right.
You know who you really love.
Oh, fuck yes.
Like you and me and our incredible span of a lifetime and parts and people you meet. It we have so many friends. You and I are the same that way. We've always come from, you know, captain of the football team. And you've always had the gift of the gab. And I piss my pants when I listen to you too much. And because you're so fucking funny. And I appreciated that the whole time. But now that the world is taking a, like, you know, it's all over the internet, where God or your spirits or your, wherever you want, is up there going, everyone go to your room. Yeah. Everyone go to your room and think about what you've done to this planet. Like, we've all been sent to our room. And when you're in your room, you do what you and I do, which is you help as much as you can. You phone as much as you can. You practice self-distancing from whatever the scientists are saying we have to do, and we will do. And then you take the pieces at the end of every day. And it's a very weird time right now, bro.
And I said, what I've become so intrigued with right now is I understand now what this is. I'm a crazy research person. I never sleep. You know, I understand zoonotic disease, 75% of infectious disease. The more we destroy agriculture, the more we destroy, you know, the rainforest, the closer we're going to get to nature, which, you know, and I understand all that. What I'm on to now in my mind is looking at what the world looks like after this. Right. And what's crazy is I know for me, I could speak for me. And again, it's hitting everybody in different ways. Is I know that my entire, it's like a mindset reset. Like, my whole thought process has changed, as in where I want to live, how I want to live, what I want to spend my money on, what I want to, people I want to engage with. what I want to be around. You know, I think that we were, there's all these people. I was joking around, you know, the other day saying, where are all these, you know, where are all these billionaires and the opulence and all the people who are out there, you know, talking about their money all the time and doing that? Where's that? Where are they now? And because the thing is that right now, you and I have been involved in so many nonprofits, and we've been on the, you know, on the front lines of raising money and really getting people together and going to Iraq and Kuwait and doing all the stuff for One Heart Source and you going to Tanzania and doing all the stuff. And it's like, but our way of doing that was two ways. We would ask people for money and we would get groups together like we did in Staten Island after Sandy. Well, you can't really ask people for money right now because everybody's nervous as heck of where their next dollar is going to come from, right? And you can't get people in groups anymore and say, hey, we're going to get all the sons together or we're going to get all these people together because you can't have people together. So we're in a very strange time as in actually how you help. So for me, what I'm trying to do is what you said, like my friends who are single and home alone, or, you know, my friends who have a bunch of kids and, you know, who is stressed out, or my friends, you know, people have lost their jobs. Multiple people have lost their jobs. It's like, just call them up and, hey, how are you, man? How's everything going? And you might not be able to offer, you know, you can't give money to everybody. You can't do whatever, but at least you can offer them like a calming voice as in, hey, the world literally shifted overnight. There was a pause button hit. And now we have to come out of this saying, because we will come out of it. But if we come out and we're stepping in the same footprints that we were in before this, we're doomed again in one way or another, because it's just science. That's the way this is now. And for you and I, what I've always, you know, what I love about you so much, and I don't want to spend this whole thing gloating on you, is that you've been always the most pragmatic, you know, rational human being, where you're as nuts as I am and as nuts as everybody else. We've always kind of stood away from everyone else because we looked at things in a more rational sense. And we're also in the most irrational business in Hollywood, where the things don't make sense, right? The best people don't get the jobs. Sometimes giant assholes are in making a lot of money or in big positions. And you're like, but wait, this is wrong. This isn't the way it's supposed to be. I think that why we've always come so close together is our look at life has been family, do the best work, help the most people, be the beacon for others, be the example to people that we can be while struggling with our own personal demons, which you and I know all about. So I just thought that I would never want to kick a show off, you know, with anybody else than you. But also the fact of there's so many different things to discuss. But right now, again, with where we're at, everybody sheltering in place, everybody in quarantine, you know, different people out there working 24-hour shifts, nobody sleeping. I think this is the time that more than ever, we need to be like, hey, we got it. We're here. Like, let's do what we can. So, you know, and I know you're doing that over there.
To you and, you know, God's ears, brother. I mean, that, whether you believe in God or not, that is absolutely the truth. And while you're on that exact moment, Theo, I have a question for you. Just this morning, I have a new philanthropic endeavor. It's with Pegasus Project in Saskatchewan. It's with STARS. They have mm-hmm. helicopters. They save people in road accidents in the North Saskatchewan. They need millions of dollars every year to survive, and the government of Saskatchewan does pretty good. Anyway, 6 months ago, they came to me and said, would you please be the spokesperson for STARS in Saskatchewan? And you know, I'm like you. I've got a lot of charities, and we give a lot of time happily, and we always try and find even more time for the ones we have. But I said, of course I – well, now, right now, today, we are at a decision has to be made. The most important thing has been that we now need to focus on ourselves and doing the right thing, all of Canada, all of America, all of Europe, all over the world with this corona thing. And so that's the most important thing. So then how do you continue to go to corporations or solo people? You got $100, you got $200. Mm-hmm. It's an incredible cause. People are so generous everywhere to give to the cause. But how do you even broach that now in the way the world is now? So I'm telling you, bro, in like a month, 3 weeks, the whole board up in Saskatchewan are going to come up with, do we postpone it a year? Do we have lower expectations? Because the most important thing now is to help our brothers and sisters and fathers and mothers get through this. It's not about anything other than getting through this as best we can, to give as much as we can to getting over this and getting the world somewhat back to whatever normal turns out to be.
Yeah, I think that what I'm sensing in everyone I'm talking to, and I'm fortunate enough with, you know, this show and just in life in general to be talking to many people, is everyone in one way or another is in survival mode. That might be financially, that might be mentally. I have friends that are sober and rely on their meetings and they're not getting those. I have, you know, people who are addicted to working out and you know, whether it be doing jujitsu or gym, and they have all this pent up energy. You know, I have, and survival mode as in, obviously, how am I going to pay my rent? How do I have a job? And there's just, it seems like survival. And I think that a lot of people are having a hard time even entertaining themselves, meaning watching a movie or watching a TV show or escapism, because they just constantly want to check their phone or their device or their news to see what's happening now. What is it now? Where are we at now? Where's Italy at? What's Brazil doing? What's going on here? And I think that it's raised this level of anxiety and awareness. And I know a lot of people, because I deal with it myself, anxiety and depression. Everybody's dealt with that, I think, at one point or another. I know that I'm honest about it. You know, I have a lot of friends that deal with it. And this is a point right now where we're seeing, I just talked to a friend who's a cop, and he said domestic violence is like through the roof because people are home. Alcohol sales through the roof. You know, gun sales through the roof, right? People are, they don't know how to react. And I surely have no idea how to react. The only thing that I know that has helped me tremendously right now is taking it minute by minute, keeping a schedule. I have to keep a schedule, because if I don't keep a schedule, every day kind of becomes whatever. It's almost like everybody said, there's no more days in the week. There's only yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Like nobody, you know, somebody said to me the other day, they said, "Hey, it's the weekend. What are you doing?" I said, "The weekend. Who? Every day is the weekend." I don't even know what day it is. Yeah, no, you never. And so I think it's just taking it minute by minute and really literally paying attention to the you know, the World Health Organization, and paying attention to the professionals, paying attention to the scientists, paying attention to the people that have your best interests at heart, and really think about this as, in my mind, like my wife and I say, because of the kids, is whatever it is, overdo it. You know what I mean? If you got to wash your hands, if you got to stay away from people, just overdo it. Don't underdo it. Overdo it in this case, because I think that rebelling right now and saying, "Oh, I don't believe in this," or "I'm not paying attention to this," that's just silly. That's silly.
The people, I need to add to this because it's a really, really good point, Theo. The people that can and will allow themselves to truly pay attention. Now, we're kidding ourselves if we think that's going to be 100% of the people on this planet. We're kidding ourselves if it's 90, maybe even 80. But it might be high 60s. The people who really, really need to now pay attention, better pay attention. Because this pandemic has now reminded the people that want to pay attention, it's going to happen again. And are we going to be prepared for the next one? Are we going to learn from our mistakes from this one? Are we going to continue to worry about the almighty buck more than other things? Are we going to start to pay attention? And I'm telling you, bro, it's the people who are starting to now voice paying attention that will make a difference when we come out of this, because we will come out of it. There's going to be so much sorrow and pain and joy and babies being born and religions being invented, whatever you want to call it, it's going to happen. The world is not stopping, but we have been put on hold. And the people who really need to pay attention better fucking pay attention, and better not be afraid of their anxieties, sharing, doing the right thing, because that's the only way Mother Earth is really going to survive this. I really believe that.
Yeah, I it's so well said, and I agree. It's so well said, and it's so true. And the thing is that one of the reasons why, you know, and everybody, you brought up Tig and Juice time before. When we were doing Sons, which feels like, it's so weird. At some days it feels like it's 1,000 years ago, and some days it feels like it's like 4 days ago. It's so bizarre. And I think it's because we get reminded of it often, right? Every time I leave the house, anytime online, anytime, we're always reminded of, you know, the show. And I have, it's so weird to say, I have such a conflicting feeling when I think of Sons. I am so incredibly grateful in more ways than anyone can imagine, because what people don't really understand is I wouldn't have my wife, I wouldn't have my kids, I wouldn't have anything in my life if it wasn't for that show. And at the same time, I'm also reminded that at times there was some really difficult moments. There were some difficult moments, especially for people like you and I, who maybe see things a little different. And especially in today's world, when you look at television and the landscape of things, we were kind of the last of the dinosaurs. You know, we were the last because people don't wait every week. And now they're starting to again. But we just had this different thing where people knew us so well that they feel like they know you. So one of the things I've always felt so, and a lot of people ask me about you because they know how close we are. You are so different from your character in so many ways. And yet, even you, Kim Coates, are really so different from almost every character I've ever seen you play, right? I've really never seen you play something who, the family man, the kind of guy, you know, whatever. I've just really never seen you. You always play a specific type of, like, not a specific type. You play every different type of character. When people come up to you, because I've been there, they want to see Tig Traeger, right? Like, they're just like, oh, that's Tig. He's crazy. He's this, he's that. And you're so not. Here you are with your bifocals that attach, you know, that attach in the front, the magnetic glasses. How is that? You've been a character actor your whole life. How is that when people come up to you as a person, as opposed to who you're playing, with what they...
You know, Theo, I mean, in 2008, when we all decided to come along with Sutter on that ride, we all were discovering who these characters were as he was writing and as we gave ourselves to these characters, and that was... But I had no idea of the power of that show. Like, I had no idea of, even for the first time, that was my first time, Junior, where I decided to be invited to do a show as a regular on a TV show. I've never done that before. It's my first one.
Amazing.
I think that was kind of your first.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
As a star.
As a regular, yeah. It was the first one.
Yeah. So, and I think it was a lot of us. Like, Boone,
most,
Charlie.
Tommy, Charlie, yep. Katie and Ron had been the only ones who had done series, and definitely the only ones who had done series that were obviously, you know, worldwide known.
And Dayton
with Deadwood, and Maggie with Mad Men.
God, Mad Before, Men. Yeah. That's unbelievable. Okay, yeah. So there you go. Anyway, my point is that I had no idea of the power of television. So all of a sudden you're in everyone's kitchen who's watching, and millions of people around the world. And then you and I would do our charities, and we'd come outside, and people would run right up and go, Juice, where's your tattoos?
Yeah,
Tig,
every time.
Tig, your hair's not as, like, Tig. And you just go, what the fuck is happening? This is Theo and I'm Kim. But, oh, I get it. You really, truly got into that show. And so, yes, people always want a bit of Tig when they meet me, I think. But I get one of three things, and you get the same thing. I get people who completely freak right out. They freak right out and they come right up. Those days are over. Mm-hmm. So there's no more coming right up to my nose anymore, buddy.
No.
That's over. Yeah. Well, number two, you know they've recognized you, but they keep their distance, but they just can't. Or number three is they want no part of it because you're probably that guy, you're probably Tig, and you're probably telling me to back away, Charlie. Like, and they just walk away. So it's one of those three reactions I get. But when people get to know you as a family man, which you are now newly, Theo, which is kind of amazing.
I came a long way. I wasn't always the family man.
Man, are you remember those days in L.A., bro?
Oh,
every Friday night, we would go to our bar, and go there, and we would do it up. All of us, and it became the Sons Bar, and everyone just loved it.
and we rode up on our motorcycles, and we, you know, it looked like we were filming an episode. And it was just, when I say the world, you know, sometimes why I think I'm in the Truman Show or whatever is, or an episode of the Twilight Zone, is everything happened at once. Like, I moved into that big house with all my friends who I'd grown up with, and then we got the show, and then it was the same year the bar opened, and it was all happening at once. And I remember being in that bar on a Tuesday with Charlie watching the show, or like we'd all go and like, and I was, and people would not know what was happening. And then we'd go up to Dayton's all on our motorcycle, and we'd all go to lunch, and, you know, we'd ride up to Big Bear or whatever. And I always said that, and especially after when we did that tour in Australia, I think that Sons was the closest to being a rock star as I'll ever come. Like what probably the Rolling Stones feel. You know what I mean?
100%. Do you remember that one particular night in Australia? You, me, and Boone went and did that big tour over there. Every big city over a 10-day period. It was insane. Mm-hmm. We had bodyguards. We had this that big white van. And I'll never forget exiting one of those establishments that held 1,000 people, packed to the gills. Boone would get up there with his guitar, sing a little song. You and me would make fun of him. Yeah. It was the best of times.
Yeah.
And we would come out the side door with our two incredible, one English, one Scottish bodyguards. And they just said, run. And we ran. And we ran for that van. And there must have been 50 women, like maybe 60. They were running. And we got in the nick of time. And they were banging on the side of that van.
Yeah.
And we escaped and went, bye-bye.
And that was every, like, that was Comic-Cons. That was the motorcycle shows we'd go to. And what was so crazy is I would think, because before Sons, you know, and you obviously a lot more, I had done 50 something guest star recurrings, independent films, you know, all that. And I remember thinking, people on Grey's Anatomy aren't dealing with this. Like, they're not, like, you know, this is, they're not experiencing this level of, like, how, and now I would imagine it's probably what the comic movie people, you know, feel, and you know, and kind of that same, you know, you and I had been to all the Comic Cons, and then when I did Luke Cage, the same thing. I would feel like that's probably what they feel, but the difference was, is that with us, people blurred reality. They actually thought we were the people. So it would, they thought we were them as we were entering bars on motorcycles, because we'd be filming. And then we'd go out.
On our bikes.
All right. I hope you're all enjoying this first show of Theory. I want to take a quick break and tell you about something that's really important to me. As the COVID-19 pandemic reshapes our lives, it's hard to know what to do. That's why I want to take a moment to talk about Why Hunger's Rapid Response Fund. Why Hunger's National Fine Food Database is there for you. If you or someone you know needs food assistance during this COVID-19 crisis, you can visit whyhunger.org/findfood or call 1-800-5-HUNGRY to locate free, nutritious food in your community. And for those of you who want to make a difference, please consider donating to Why Hunger's Rapid Response Fund. The money raised will support those most impacted by hunger and poverty during the COVID-19 crisis. Please visit whyhunger.org/rapid response and donate what you can today.
You said it already. That Sun's time. You know what that was, Rossi? Is people say to me, so you must have 1,000 friends.
No.
You've done like 60, 70 movies, whatever. You've done Bad Blood, the whole thing, mm-hmm. Sons. I mean, you must have 1,000 friends. And I go, I'm going to be really honest with you. I have a lot of acquaintances.
Me too.
I've had a lot of pretty good times on set. I can count on one hand where I was going to, you know, punch somebody out because they were being such dicks. Pretty good. It's been pretty good behavior on the stuff that I've done. But I will say that show, Sons of Anarchy in particular, that's it. That's all we all have as an example. The Ryan Hurst, the Charlie Hunters, you, Boone, Tommy, me, Maggie, Dayton, Ron, Katie. The 10 leads plus all these – we still hang out.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know how rare, I tell people, do you know how rare that is? Like Black Hawk Down for me, and I know. I every time I say Black Hawk Down.
I still talk.
I do, yeah. Of course, it's one of my favorite films, but I still have to bust your balls about it.
Yeah, every time. And what Eric Bana and Billy Fichtner became, you know, to me, like you, is best friends. And that's very rare. So that show, Sons of Anarchy, for those 6 months, we would get so crazy as a family at the end of the 6 months going, thank God it's November. Thank God we could not wait for April to come around to start again.
Oh, man. And I have a theory on why. And I'm going to tell you what my theory is, not to steal the title of the show. But I do have a theory on why that is. One day, if anybody ever writes the book, you know, the Real Reaper or Behind the Reaper or whatever they're going to call it. We had so many tumultuous, crazy, bad, you know, funny emotions, happy. We had so many things happen that almost seem, when you look back on them now, seem insane, seem crazy, right? Like that I think that made us closer. Like, you know what I mean? Because it was every year there was something that was so huge in our lives that had occurred that whether it be what's going on, you know, who's getting paid what, or who had a fight, or who's getting killed off, or who walked off the set, or now we have armed security guards, and what happened with this, and, you know, and who's mad at this, and we had so much stuff going on, but at the same time, it wasn't one of those shows where it was just everybody hated each other, and there was this. We balanced it out with, at the end of the day, we were brothers, we were family, we loved each other. Even though there were times and literally physical altercations had occurred where we were so mad at each other and so angry, but at the same time, we were family because we had gone through all that. So my theory is that I've been on other shows now. And while I love everyone, I almost came out with like, and not to diminish the word, I almost came off Sons with like a feeling of like almost like a PTSD. Like I'd go into other shows and I'd be like, what's the problem? What's going on? You know, and they'd be like, calm down. We're just asking you to go to makeup. I was like, all right, I'll go in 5 minutes. I was like, why is everybody yelling? They're like, no one's yelling. Because I was so used to this high adrenaline, high testosterone, high atmosphere. And you and I, who a lot of times were really just sitting in the audience of it. Most of the time, me and you would go hide in your trailer and I'd lay on the floor and I'd go, what's going on?
Yeah.
Give me another one of those 100 Altoids you take a day, because this is, we didn't know.
I was the best smelling biker in the world.
You really were. You always smelled like lavender and Altoids.
I don't know if you're going to remember this, but this is a perfect segue. There was, not only was that show going completely off the rails from the fifth season on, we all became tighter and tighter and tighter. And I don't know if you remember this, but one of my biggest regrets of that show, I had two actually. There was never really a Tig Juice payoff.
Never.
There was never really a Tig Clay payoff. But I realized, and it came to all of us, that Sutter only looked forward. That was part of his brilliance. He looked forward. He didn't need to tie shit. He just went, right? And I don't know if you remember this, but there was, and everyone was doing their crazy last season, the two last seasons, methods, shit, and feelings, this and that. There was a show where, and we had to constantly remind people, it's a show.
It's a TV show.
It's a fictional television show. Theo would get a script. Kim would get a script, Charlie would get a script, we'd discuss it, and then we'd do it. There was one day where Juice was on the outside looking in, and you got brought to a clubhouse, and we met you somewhere. And I remember everyone was so angry at Juice.
Yeah.
And I treated you like my missing dog. Like I rubbed your head. And I almost kissed the top of your head. Like I was outside looking in at my little Juice.
I was at the Mayan clubhouse.
It was at the fucking Mayan clubhouse. That's exactly right. Yeah. You remember that?
Yeah.
And I came up to you and I rubbed your head and it was like, I felt for you. I went the opposite way. You know, I love doing opposites. I love playing opposites. And
Me too.
it was,
that's why what you do so well, and again, I told you that I'm going to give you compliments throughout this, so don't get used to it, is you taught me something that I've now used multiple times since, which is just because you're playing a bad guy doesn't mean you have to raise your voice and be angry. Some of the most devious, deceptive, nefarious characters laugh. They smile. They talk low. They take their time because they're in control. And, you know, like Gary Oldman told you, you give good creep. It's when you want to creep people out. I've said this because I've been in my share of, you know, fist fights in my life. The ones that I was always nervous about were like the kids that were laughing and like they didn't look like it bothered them. And I was like, oh, man, this is going to be a tough one. You know? And I think that what we found is when I see an actor, you know, that he's supposed to be angry in a scene and then he gets angry, it's kind of sad because they're kind of missing a chance to really do something different. And on that scene that you're speaking about exactly, what people don't realize, Charlie and I basically didn't really talk for almost a year and a half, 2 years. And that was after that he gave me that kiss and said, you know, whatever the Fredo line that he said. And then the reason why the scene with him and I in the hospital, in the jail went so well was because we hadn't actually exchanged dialogue for, it felt like 2 years, I think. And because he was doing his thing and I was doing my thing. And while everybody has their process, I don't judge people by how they have to get there. Whoever you got to get there, as long as you're not affecting people, get there. And I think that what you said is on that day, I'll remember everybody coming in, puffed out chests, people coming in, you know, mad at me. Literally, when the camera wasn't even rolling, people are like, I fucking me. And I was like, this is so strange. But at the same time, I get it. They needed to do that. So you have always been kind of a step above. And I think because you had been there on such big stages and you also have a different way of looking at the whole art of acting. And I've believed this, and I say this to a lot of young actors that I mentor right now, which is you want to be great at this gig, have a life outside of it. If this is all you have, you are doomed because you're going to start doing things that are very out of character of how humans act. You realize that this is all a bonus. What we do is a bonus. So that scene in particular, but like you said, I don't have a lot of regrets about the show. The one regret I have is that you and I did some really funny stuff in the beginning. Obviously the crystal meth to the dog, the crank, the whole episode when everybody was away and, you know, you and I had that.
No, yeah, no. And even when you said my hair isn't gray because you put shoe polish, like
yeah.
the little one-liners yeah. remind the entire audience of, oh, look at Chig, look at Juice. It was so funny.
We had a chance to really do that. So that's my one regret because we really lost the comedy the last couple of seasons. There was really no comedy. And in the beginning, there was a lot of it. So we lost that. But again, you know, not taking anything away. The show is, you know, monumental. And, you know, last film I did in Bulgaria, a guy jogged by me with a Reaper on his sweatshirt. And I was like, I mean, it's literally everywhere. So I always say the Reaper is like the bat signal. Like it just seems like it's in the air at all times, no matter what year it is. And I think that was one regret. The other regret I think I have is that I think that fear, which worked for Juice, so I can't say that I regret it too much, but the overriding fear that Theo had on the show, I was so fearful of if I was going to get killed off. Was it going to be there? It became such a huge part of my life that I started taking the anxiety of Juice and putting him in Theo. And I think that maybe didn't make me enjoy it as much as I probably should have. Because you remember, when we would get those hiatuses, we wouldn't all talk for like a couple of weeks and then we'd come back together. Because we almost needed like to let the air out of the balloon for a minute.
I remember one time with you. In fact, it was a charity day. We all decided, you and Ron drove, because Pearl wanted to drive, so you went with him, and me and the boys got in our bikes. We went down to San Diego. We had a big signing. There was a lot of SEALs there. There was a lot of, you know, a lot of military. It was a beautiful day for the Wounded Warriors, and really nice day. And we just got a script for the next episode. And you were freaking out. You were completely beside yourself. And you always came to me when there was a big issue.
Yeah.
And I remember we were in a fucking bathroom. And you were like, I got five lines. I'm like, what the fuck is that? Like, what? And I remember telling you, I said, look, I can't help you out, bro. All I can tell you is that whether it's five lines or 50 or two scenes or 20, just be the best actor you can be, because we're all seeing it. Mm-hmm. Sutter's, we're all seeing it. Whether they write me in or write me out, I'm going to enjoy every fucking second of this thing. So don't, you were so crazed. You were so like, you worked so hard. You were doing all this stuff for charities in your life and becoming a better actor every time. But you were always like, that was a really big point to just let you know, people know how good you are. Just try and let it go.
Yeah. And letting the hand play itself out. It's so funny, because I remember that exact moment. That was a giant life lesson. I always point to life lessons that would happen to me. What's really funny about that story, it was a couple of, maybe 2 weeks later, I was on set. And again, I still had a lot of those feelings of like, man, when is my time? Like, when is, you know, and it didn't come until like season four. And I was like, when am I going to get called up to bat? Like, I'm ready, coach, put me in, like, come on. And what happened was I had changed my life dramatically. We all know between season three and four, a lot of things, not just physically, mentally, everything. I had taken care of myself. I had dealt with a lot of things that I had to deal with. And I'll never forget, after you and I had that conversation, I was walking in Makeup Trail, one of those days where, you know, you come in at like 4 a.m. to do the head tattoos and cut the mohawk and all that. And the editor was there super early. And we didn't really have a lot of conversations with the editors, you know, because they were doing their own thing.
Yeah.
And he was like, hey, man, how are you? You know, I was like, oh, I'm good or whatever. And he's like, hey, man, I want to tell you something. He's like, I appreciate you so much. He goes, everything you do off camera, like when you're off camera that you bring to other actors, he goes, but when you're on camera in the background or when the camera goes to you, you're always in it. So you always give me a cut point. He goes, I could always cut to your face. I could always, like, no matter what, he goes, you wouldn't believe how many actors I can't cut to, because if they're not speaking, they don't do anything. And he goes, and you're always doing something. He goes, I just want to tell you, I appreciate you. And I was like, holy shit. That's exactly what he was saying. That's what Kim was saying. It's like, I'm there, even if I'm like, so then it really transformed my acting, because I started realizing that I can say so much more without saying anything. But again, especially, and we just talked about this in, you know, the way we are as people, the consumers, the money, the this, the that, we think that certain things, the more. And it's really the polar opposite in what we do for a living in acting. And I think that I've really related that a lot to my life, where it's like, yeah, I could talk till, you know, I could talk till the day is long. I could talk all day, but I've also realized that in the quietness, when I go running, when I go for a hike, when I go, you know, just sit, meditate or whatever, I've learned so much more about myself. And I think that I've taken that from that moment of work into this. So, you know, that was a hard thing. And you've always shown me that. You've always, you know, we always joke around about the Kim stance with your leg out. You know, you always have to put your hand in your belt. There was, man, the TIG stance.
My trainer is still trying to get that fucking fixed. I mean, I did that TIG stance with my little sword, my little knife, and yeah. I would stand that way. My hip is gone from that. I mean,
it's unbelievable.
The TIG Traeger hip, I'm still trying to get it back together.
But what was so crazy about that show, because it was such a shit show at points, but what was so crazy too is we were doing something, and it brings up your daughter, who's now, you know, potentially, who knows how far she's going to go in running Los Angeles at one point, is we were doing the One Heart Source events, which was another charity we were doing, you know, for the kids in Tanzania. And those events were massive that we were doing. They were like concerts. They were huge shows.
Well, and you might have even sort of discovered this before me in a way, and that was that, and I talk about it so much now. I'm so fortunate to have the career I've had, and I guess I'm still having, that I can now take the weight of that hard work and all the ups and the downs and the bad and the good with getting parts and not, or whatever, that it's all worked out for me. And now I have never enjoyed giving back more in my entire life. And you actually got on that little horse a little bit before me. And now what we do with One Heart Source, I realized very early that that girl, my daughter and my wife and Brenna and all you guys who helped out so much, we raised over $400,000 for that incredible nonprofit for all those kids who have nothing in Tanzania. And those three boys that I put through college happily, all got their degrees, are all making a difference in their communities in Tanzania and Arusha. That's because of the Kyla Coates, then the Theo Rossi, the Kim Cook, all the guys getting together. Those three big events we had, Eric Bana got involved. We all got, you help out other people, yeah, in these charities. And so for me, when people want to pay for my autograph and the money can go somewhere, people want to come to a One Heart Source night and the money goes to Tanzania, but they get to see Charlie and Theo and Ron, and that they'll never forget that night, whether they paid $100, $200, $500, whatever they could afford. That all went to the most incredible thing, which is what all our charities do. So I love giving back, man, more now than anything.
And I think that, again, where to me, what has always been so fascinating is you were doing this, you've been in this racket for a long time.
100 years. Yeah,
literally. But you've always kind of been on the outside of it, meaning personality-wise. Like, you're in it, but your personality has always been on the outside of it.
That's why I love you. That's why I love Bill. That's why I love Eric and Matt and those guys. Because you know what? We worked so hard, but then I'd rather have a beer watching the Raptors. Mm-hmm. I'd rather go on a walk to look at an owl's nest. I love doing my therapist, right? We all should have therapists. If you don't, you should. Yeah. My therapist about a year ago, I'm sitting there with all, he called me King Kong. My nickname was King Kong because he could tell I was not burning out, but I had a lot of energy, a lot of positivity, right? And he said to me, "What is one of the most favorite things you could ever do?" And I'm trying to be as honest now as I've ever been, more honest than I've ever been. And I remember, it didn't take me long, I said, locked in a hotel room with a bottle of wine, no phone, and watching the Masters golf tournament. And he looked at me and he went, "That is perfect. No phone, bottle of wine, locked in a room, no fans, no people, and watching golf, which is calm. It's calm. It's about staying mentally and physically. It's not the most physical thing. It's not hockey. We don't actually love hockey, but golf." And that told him a lot about who I am. And so, yeah, bro. And you know what? One more thing, Theo. This last 2 weeks of my own self-isolation and no people around, you go a bit squirrely, as you can imagine me, going pretty, no one to talk to really, except on the phone. That's fine. I started thinking about my decades. Not like decades. Mm-hmm. I thought about the 80s and that, how, I discovered acting in the late 70s and got lucky and worked hard. Theater, didn't know what a soliloquy was. 80s were all about theater. That gave me my base, right? 90s. What was that about for Coetzee? Well, you know what that was? That was Hollywood discovering me. That was the Bruce Willis and the Kevin Costner and doing those big ass movies, right? And then what was 2000s? Well, you know what that was? That was when the world changed like it is now. The towers came down. I didn't work for a year and a half. So that was, and then all of a sudden it's the middle of 2000s. Now what am I learning? I'm scraping together with these little movies and career's pretty good, but.
And the writer's strike? The writer's strike happened.
The writer's strike. And then all of a sudden I get this thing called like Sons of Anarchy. And that power of television, of good TV, that catapulted me all the way to then doing movies again, then producing And then Babylon. So it's a fascinating life when you think about, and these times that we are forced to think about what we're doing with each other and on this planet with each other, and how important family should be and doing the right thing. Listen to the scientists out there. There's nothing better than reflection.
Yeah.
I love it.
I wrote Welcome to Yourself.
Oh, you know, wow. Dude, that's fucking beautiful.
Yeah.
Welcome to Yourself. How about that? You should have told me that 2 weeks ago when I went to that farmhouse. I might have had a different perspective.
I said that. I was like, get ready because here you are. Right? And welcome, because you probably haven't talked to yourself in a long time. But here you are. So the question is, do you like yourself? Can you even be around yourself? How do you feel about yourself? Oh, and by the way, you're going to have a lot of deep conversations with yourself right now, because things of the way you might have been living, the way you might have been thinking, the way you looked at the world, the way you looked at how you actually existed. What was your income based on? What was your daily activity based on? So it's so funny. When you were just mentioning the hotel, the bottle of wine, and the Masters, I thought about that, because I also do go to therapy, and I hope my therapist asked me that. And my answer, as crazy as this may sound, would be out running.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I love to run. Now, the question is, why? Well, let's drill down on that. I'm alone with my thoughts. My heart's racing. I'm active. I'm moving. I'm accomplishing. And I think that those moments of that make me, I like to think about things, to reflect, to do self inventory. And I think that it helps so much, you know, not just as an artist, but as a parent, as everything. And where I feel bad, because I'm like, oh man, why am I not saying I want to be with my kids and my family? Or why am I not saying I want to be on a set, you know, doing so? It's not that. I just think that for guys like us and for people like us, that to be reflective on things helps propel us forward to do better things. I'm not afraid of myself. I was for a long time. And I'm like you, where you just said, I'm trying to do this thing where I want to be honest with myself. Man, that's real hard. And right now in the state of the world with what's going on with fear, a lot of people are having a hard time accepting this.
Yeah.
It is what it is. We got to do what we got to do, right? And we got to be able to talk to ourselves into saying, like, we just have very little amount of control at this moment. The only thing we can control is how we treat other people, how we treat ourselves, how we treat the people we love around us, and how we continue to take those steps every day and move forward. But right now, that's all you're in control of.
I know one thing about myself during this whole thing, and that is that I have been, like when you were talking about, you know, being with Meg and your two beautiful boys and me and my beautiful family with all the ups and downs that comes along with a long relationship that I've been lucky enough to be in and still in happily, is those are a given. Watching your daughters and your sons and your kids being born, that's a given. That it doesn't get any better than that. I mean, that's a given. So what I took, the reason why I came up with that answer is because my life, these last 2 weeks of isolation and with the way the world is going right now, you better start thinking about it and how you can be a better human being all the time. Because it's easy. When I'm like with you, Theo, and you and I came up with that TIG and juice time.
Yeah, it's great.
Not only was it great, it was easy.
Yeah.
Like I had you. You had me. We've always talked about you and I do really good ham and egg. That's what best friend. They ham and egg it. You ham and egg it. I don't have to worry, because I know you have my back and I had yours. And that's why, right? So like right now, there's no stress here. This is easy. But what is hard is, what are you going to do with yourself? What are you going to do with yourself? I don't have you. You don't have me. I don't have Billy. What are you going to do? I'm in a farmhouse. I got no fucking TV. I got no Wi-Fi. What do you mean I can't call anybody? What do you mean well, you can't. So what I played the piano.
Wow.
I listened to a radio. That's all I had was a radio. I eat Kraft dinner. I haven't had Kraft dinner in 42 years. I love Kraft dinner. I mean, I did stuff that I've never done because I'm Kim Coates.
Yeah.
Well, now having these kinds of conversations with you and doing what you're doing in these really tough times right now, and me just getting off the phone with my Pegasus charity in Saskatchewan, things are still moving forward. and how do we make it better? How do we make this not as severe the next time it happens? Because it will happen again. And we need to stay in front of the world and the environment and the animals. We have to make a difference there, or this will just be happening again.
Yeah. And I think that also in the business we're in, you know, and again, we've been, you know, very fortunate. It's funny, people, you know, I made a joke the other day that people think all actors are like multi-millionaires and just like never, which couldn't be the least, you know. I had somebody say something to me the other day that was the most ludicrous thing. They were talking to me about this other business I have, and they said, well, you had to be making like at least X amount. I don't even want to say what they said per episode on Sons. And I said, I think I made that the entire time I was on Sons. Like when you're a character actor, when you're like someone that just, you know, you're in all these projects and you're doing it, you have great years and you have great things, but you're literally what I always say. And what I've always loved about Sons and what I've loved about the people is you're blue collar actors. You're out there. You're just kind of like, hey, I'm going to fight for every role. And, you know, some I'm going to get offered and some I'm going to have to fight for and some I'm going to get passed over for. But I'm literally out there grinding every day. And, you know, I have to figure it out as I go, you know. And the perception of that has always come from because the ones they hear about is they hear about, you know, the Will Smiths, the Jim Carreys, the people have, you know, all this giant money, the Marvel people and all that. But that's just not necessarily the case. And why I say that is I think that this situation we're in right now has also changed a lot. And it's been happening even before this, that the business has changed where, like you said, I want easy. I think that people are saying like, yeah, that person might be a great actor or actress, but they are horrible to be around. Right. And people are saying, I'm not going to do that. Where back in the day, and you know this, you just talked about your decades, they would deal with a lot of shit because of who someone was or what their talent brought. And that bad behavior was tolerated up until recently, meaning that, and not all the other stuff that is going down now. I'm talking about just like really people who just weren't nice people, nice to the crew, nice to anybody, right? And that, and I came in as starting as an extra, like you come in, you know, theater and going in, and we came in when we were just so happy to have a job that we were always on our best behavior. And you'd see these people who are on their bad behavior and you'd be like, wow. And then what would people say? Oh, it's just, you know, it's just the way Hollywood is. It's just the way it is. It's been like this forever. And it was like a model that was based on bad behavior. And now I'm so happy that we're moving into a time, I believe, and it had started before all this, where not just being good actors, but being good people, who you are as a person matters. And I have to believe in my heart that that's where we're going even more. And I think that you and I have seen both sides of that, right? Because I know you have. I've heard your stories from back in the day that were like on some of those movies.
Yeah, I agree. I think that we're all so lucky to do what we love in this business, and yet it's crazy personalities, and I've seen 40 some years of crazy personalities from the stage days right to movies, TV. But I know that because of my dad, who's no longer with me.
Yeah.
And you know, Freddie, you would have just loved dad. I mean, you love my mom.
I miss Freddie Coates. I love your mom.
But Fred always, like, I when I meet people, I shake their hand hard. Those days are probably over now, mm-hmm. but I, you know, and I'd look them in the eye and I would just be who I was. And then I would turn into this character and I've never, ever gotten away from that. But early when I didn't know as much, like I didn't know that when I did, you know, the last Boy Scout with Bruce Willis, I didn't know that he was the last guy to come on set. Like I remember going to Kim, time for, you know, and so I'd come on set and I waited a half an hour and I thought, yeah. Well, where the fuck is Willis? Like,
yeah.
And then I realized that there wasn't a focus puller wasn't there yet. Like everyone had to be, and then Bruce would come and, oh, there's the star. And now Bruce is a good buddy of mine. But back then, I just wanted to be the best actor I could. So I've learned a lot. But I got to tell you, if I don't like someone now, or they just make me uncomfortable, as long as they're not harming anyone, because then I'm going to punch them in the face, mm-hmm. I just walk away. I don't want to be around yellers. I don't want to be around people that make me uncomfortable, because I don't have to be. As long as you're not doing any harm to anybody, then right. I'll say something. Right. But that's a great thing about, like, Bad Blood, for example, Theo, and you know this about me, to be able to co-produce that and co-cast it and get people, like, from the ground up. You've done that with that beautiful movie you did.
Yeah,
I heard. You know, and that was such a beautiful little film. And your work was fucking amazing. And I got to tell you, to be involved from the ground up, it comes from the top. It comes from the 100%. Top.
100%.
And when it comes down from the top, and you're a good human being, just trying to be even a better human being, and to get the best out of people, I don't have to be best friends with anybody. I just want to be a good human being. And then and when people see how hard I worked on that show, they worked even harder, which is what you want in a production.
Yeah, because you're that beacon. You're the buoy in the ocean. You know, people are so nervous and people don't know how to act. And a lot of people take on the leadership's personality. You know, you and I have seen that, right? Where as the leader acts a certain way, or the person who's supposed to be the leader, sometimes leader is too nice of a word for people, everybody else who's not really confident in who they are, they take on parts of that person's personality. And then it starts to kind of spoil the whole bunch. I learned things, you know, and again, I used to, you know, I like you always say, I had such a hard time. I didn't suffer fools lightly when I was young. And I realized that I was in a business with all fools. So I would be fighting every day if I kept that attitude of like, wait, what did you just say to that person? You can't talk to people like that. Or what did you just do? And then, like you said, what I learned as I went on was, oh, this one only comes out of the trailer when that one comes out of the trailer.
Amazing.
Or this one, if they don't get their breakfast, they don't care if there's 200 people waiting, they're not coming out. Or the weirdest one for me was, I was working with this person there was two really weird ones. I was working with this person. And I don't like calling people out, but I was working with this person and the camera was on me and their performance was dog shit. Like they were the worst I'd ever seen. Like they couldn't remember their lines, you know, kept fucking up left and right. And I was like, man, this person is having a tough day. And it was making because you're only as good as your dance partner. So I couldn't do what I needed to do because it was a very reactionary scene. And then they turned the camera around and this person became Gene Hackman. And I was like, what happened here?
What's going on here?
So I didn't know that was a trick. So it was one of the older, focus pulls or camera ops, or somebody came over to me and said, oh man, I haven't seen that in a while. I said, seen what? And he's like, that dude just did you dirty. So when it goes into editing, they're going to have to cut to him because he gave a better performance. And I was like, what? I didn't know people did this. And I went up to that dude. I met him at his trailer and I said, listen here, homie. I said, I don't know what show you've come from or what you're doing or whatever. Because this person was like a recurring guest star on the show. And I had just never seen that behavior. I didn't know those little tricks. And we could laugh forever about, you know, certain people when they were in the background of the scene, they just wanted to be on camera. So they had no sense of continuity. They'd be all over the scene.
Nothing. Charlie Chaplin. They were all over the map. They came without their cane.
They just wanted to be in the scene. So I was learning.
Hello, my darling.
I was just learning these tricks that people were playing in this business, this real nefarious stuff. And I just said, man, as much as the business, being around people like you, being around Jimmy Smits, being around Alfred Woodard, being around certain people, Mahershala, that have taught me how to be, I've also learned so many from so many people how not to be, right? So when you do get in a position like Bad Blood, when you do get in a position like Bad Hurt, it's strange that they both have bad before, but when you get, it's pretty cool too. When you get in those positions where you are the example, where you're trying to, you know, be the leader, you pull from that bank of like, I'll never do this. I'll never do that. I'll never do this. Oh, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. This is the good stuff. It's really interesting, man, because it's a journey. And that's why after this, the dust settles on, you know, on what it is. And my God, for everybody that's, you know, for all of us, for each one of us, because this is affecting every single person globally. When the dust settles on this, I do hope that our business that we're in, our primary, you know, source of income, that business really gets its head out of its ass. And I mean that in a way of like, I'm sometimes almost embarrassed by a lot of the people in the business. And I say that in a way of like, they're so out of touch. Certain people that I meet, they have no other care for humans or making the world better. And they only do it if like a camera's on them or if it's going to get them to that next step. And I think that it's really hard because it is a crabs in the bucket business, but it doesn't need to be. It doesn't need to be. It is such a beautiful, we're carrying on such a beautiful thing. Like you just said, we were on this TV show that changed people's lives by doing one heart source, raising 400K, and now they're off to higher educations.
That's right. And yeah, that's right. And I also think that if you look at the generational gap of me and you, and then there's Brenna, my youngest daughter, who is well on her way. Now, Brenna, I don't know what's going to happen with that talented daughter of mine, but I will tell you this. She's a good human being and she's living her life and she's going to want to follow in dad's footsteps and beyond. Mm-hmm. Brenna knows when shit's going down on her sets, when stuff's going wrong in the theater, she always says something. So I take solace in her and parts of that generation that need to do better. Then I look at your generation, right? Those late 30s, early 40 guys, right? They've kind of lived a little bit of life now. You're still doing what you love, Theo. You know why? Because you're good at it, because you worked hard at it. And if you look now at my age, like those early 60s, late 50s guys, I don't care how young and beautiful I freaking look right now.
Yeah, you do.
I've got a lot in my socks, a lot of stuff that I've seen and witnessed. And I'm telling you, I only want to work in conditions that you just talked about, we trying to get to and stay. Yeah. That's all I would rather do a little movie like a Bad Herd or a Cold Brook or something that we've done and we'll continue to do for 1.2 million or 750,000 if the crew and those guys and girls on the other side of the camera are giving 110% to my close-ups as I will to theirs.
That's right.
That's really what interests me. Now, I'm not silly enough to not know that those years of Sons of Anarchy that got me through the private schools for my kids, I didn't buy my first house till 2005. We don't know what's happening or that's the best solution. Yeah. So I know what those big movies can be paying-wise. I know what television shows can be paying-wise if you are lucky enough to be on a good one and they're lucky enough to hire guys like you and me. We're doing good work. But for me at my age, all I want to say is it's always kind of been that way with me, but it's always about the script. It's always about the director. It's always about my fellow actors. It always has been, Theo. Sometimes I get paid scale. Sometimes I get paid a lot more than that.
Yeah. And again, that's the journey of a true character actor. That's the journey of a true artist. Right. And it's just an interesting, it really is a lot of times. And I think, you know, why we have come so close and our families have come so close and why we can talk about things very openly about, you know, our fears, our anxieties, the stuff that's going on in the world, the stuff that's going on, you know, you and I know what to shy away from. We know what to lean into, you know, the stuff that we just seem to look at the world and it's not about us first. Where we take care of ourselves, it's about everyone else first. And that's not saying like being a martyr or saying that you're better or more better than anyone. It's just the fact that I think after you, and again, like we said about Sons, I think when you struggle and you go through and you live a well-rounded life and you take a couple punches here and there and you kind of keep moving, it gives you that appreciation where you realize it's just not all about you and it's not that easy. And you got to be fortunate and you got to be so grateful because of your fortune of when you get here. So, you know, listen, man, I tell you, and I could talk to you for 1,000 hours, because one of the things that, you know, I always want to say to you is just, you inspire me to be better all the time. I appreciate you. And I'll tell you this. We will always have one day. We're going to do something else soon together. And I can't wait to do that, because I really hope we do. But man, those years on Suns.
they were, we would need another couple of podcasts to just touch on one season. I do want to say, you know, I will always have a bigger nose than you.
Always.
You will always be a faster runner than me.
Always.
You will always be a bigger basketball fan than me, some hockey.
Always, yeah.
But
always.
We're kind of the same guy. And I will say one more thing, and that is, now that we're in this together, the world, right? Some of the refreshing things that you read are animals, dog shelters. People are adopting dogs.
Yeah.
One of the first loves I had about you was Benji and Rocco. Mm-hmm. You had three dogs. And
Sasha.
And Sasha. And, of course, I had Tara. Mm-hmm. And there's something in the way Ben, when he came to me, it was different than some of your other friends. Like, he knew I loved him, and I knew he was also very protective of you. I never forced myself on him, but when he would let me rub, I love dogs, right? I mean,
and it's funny, that was one of the first events, you know, we started doing together, is we started bringing awareness. You know, I'm now on the board of a few different, you know, animal charities and rescues and all that. And, you know, listen, I always say that animals know right away who you are. You know, it's not just their sense of smell is however many times greater than ours, their sense of awareness. Benny was the most intuitive dog. You know, we all know the story, and I'll probably say it again, of when he saved my life, you know, when he saved my life and woke me up when literally saved my life. And I'd always been in debt to him and in gratitude to him his whole life. But he recognized you, and he would tell me who he didn't like as much as he would tell me who he did like. And all my rescues had been like that. So, you know, I think that the first thing that brought us together was our love of animals. And while this is all going on, like you said about the rescue of animals going up, what's also really interesting is that the world in itself, as much as the humans, like we're suffering, the animals are like repairing themselves, right? They're repairing. The world is repairing. The sky is different. The smog is gone. You know, the CO2 levels, you know, and animals are now, you know, I was reading something about the turtles who do all this stuff on the beach in a certain part of the world where, you know, they do all their, they hatch all their eggs. And now it's like the most that's ever been, because there's no humans on the beach for them to hide from. And obviously, you know, we've seen the dolphins in the canals in Venice and all the stuff. And it's like, it's the environment and the world really trying to tell us, like, just wake up, please. We love you. You're part of us, but know your species, like know the limit of your species, just like we know the limit of ours, right? Lions aren't ripping through our door to kill us because they understand their place. Everybody understands. And we seem to be the only one that doesn't. And I think that if I can see in the misery and all the stuff that's going on and all the sadness and everybody's tired and everybody's scared and all the anxiety and my fear for all the, you know, the emergency workers, the frontline workers, and my brother-in-law, my friends who are cops, you know, Jake and all the people you have met, where my silver lining is that the earth is trying to tell us something. And I think that we have to see that. And I believe that people like you and I don't worry about us seeing it.
It's that 67% that I just pulled out of my mouth.
Yeah.
Whatever percentage of people who care and who read and who want to make a difference, they have to come to the front lines now. And hopefully we will, more than ever before.
Yeah. Well, I love you, brother. I would tell you to go give Di a kiss, but I know she doesn't want to kiss you. So tell her the kiss is from me.
She would much rather kiss you, trust me.
100%.
She always has.
Tell the girls hello.
Love to Meg and the boys. I love you, buddy.
100%. I love you, brother. You're the best. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for listening to the first episode of Theory. I hope you had as much fun as I did. So here's the deal. That was our first episode, and I'm so happy you're all part of this journey. Do me a favor. Go to Apple Podcasts. Give it 5 stars. Rate it. Make comments. Do the whole thing. Go to Spotify. Type in Theory, Theo Rossi, the whole bit, and go follow it. Podcast One. You know, Apple's the big one. Go over to Apple Podcast and, you know, type in Theory or wherever you're listening to this. Because apparently, you know, the ratings and reviews, the show charts higher, you know, we get more episodes and kind of all that jazz. So I'm going to keep pressuring you to do that. So here's the pressure. Feel the pressure. I love Kim Coates. I love Tig. He's my favorite character on Sons. I'm so glad I got to sit down with him. And it's funny. I was just thinking about something with that. You know, he mentioned how, you know, we didn't really get to do the comedic stuff that we had done earlier in the show. And I was thinking about, I remember it as clear as day when him and I were sitting in that junkyard and the Dobermans, the real Dobermans came out and attacked us. And you got to remember, we didn't really know each other that well. I think it was like episode 3 or something. And it was the one where I feed the dogs Crank. And man, we just had such a ball. And that was like our instant connection, right? Because I was such a big fan of his and just an instant connection. And we continued that comedy for a little while. And, you know, it's something that we always wanted to do, but, you know, everything happens for a reason. And, you know, Juice had that really dark downfall and, you know, Tig had some crazy moments throughout. But just know that we keep our comedy up in real life with usually me making fun of him at all times. It's just kind of what I do. I love the guy. And I hope you guys love the episode. I appreciate every single one of you. Go rate, review, do the whole thing. Let's get Theory popping everywhere. We have some amazing, amazing episodes coming up. Big love, everybody. I'm excited. Let's go.
Amazon is hiring near you. Earn a competitive wage and start as soon as 7 days. No resume or experience required. Health and safety are a top priority with all of our roles and sites, and Amazon is taking precautions in our buildings to keep people healthy. Go to amazon.com/apply. That's amazon.com/apply. Amazon is an equal opportunity employer.